pirouetting in on Static this evening. It is great to see Alex and Ben from Bad Dreams. How are you, blokes?
Very well, Berko.
Thanks, Berko.
I thought I'd use a ballet term to introduce you guys with Doomsday Ballet out. Does the record feel like a bit of a dance and a pivot for Bad Dreams, Alex?
And the rest.
Yeah, I guess it does. Well, progression would be the term I'd use, but we've tidied the sound up a bit, refined it, stripped it back, deconstructed it, reconstructed it.
For a third record, it's great to hear how much has gone on in terms of the leaps and bounds that have been made for Bad Dreams. There's been a shift in gears in a number of ways for the band this time around. I mean, I guess the first one was in the lead up to the making of the record, you found yourself split between Adelaide and Melbourne?
That's right, yeah.
So what was that like for a rock band that are used to getting in a room with each other and smashing stuff out, Ben?
We kind of still did that, but it worked for the better in another way because we sort of spent more time refining demos without not being in a band environment, so you're able to focus on actual songwriting and melody and lyrics. And then when we came together, it's not like we're all just fighting for pole position with who can turn their amp up the loudest and get their idea through.
So you'd already sorted that stuff out.
Yeah, we'd kind of already gotten there, and then we were able to refine it from there.
That must be good, all the brinkmanship goes on over email rather than in the room.
Yeah.
And Al, of course, has become the fifth member of the band.
Alistair.
Yeah. He originally started to fill in for me when I couldn't do some shows, and then quite quickly became a vital cog in the machine. And he's been particularly valuable in this album because he's got a studio, he's an engineer, so he recorded a lot. We recorded 50 demos.
Wow.
In a sort of multi-track sense.
Did that help to get him in the band full-time, the fact that he had that studio? You kind of went, we need this guy.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Oh, I mean, I've been...
He's a terrible bloke.
I've been friends with Alistair since school, and we used to play in, like, crappy high school band together and then used to jam together. So that's where that relationship was sort of founded, but...
Yeah, no, he's been an awesome member, like... Even for those few years, it was hard for him. He was sort of in limbo. He was saying the other day that he'd be playing most of the shows and then a press shot or something would come out and he wouldn't be in it and his friends would be like, I thought you said you were playing with Bad Dreams.
I am, I swear.
Yeah, you can't be on the benches forever, can you?
Yeah, we're all really good friends and he fits the dynamic really well.
And I guess the third thing that's happened, which is the most noticeable thing, is you've gone with a different team of producers for Bad Dreams, because for the first two records, they were made with Ozrock veteran Mark Opitz. And now you've gone with a couple of whippersnappers in Burke Reid and Jack Ladder. And that's made Doomsday Ballet a pretty rich record, Ben.
Burke's definitely a whippersnapper. He has an incredible work ethic and just has a strange talent to be able to pull things out of you that you didn't think that were in there. Well, I'm just speaking on my behalf in terms of like vocal melodies and hitting different parts of my register. And... creating a better singer out of me than I thought I could be.
Also good because you've made two records and you might think you know everything and yet you have this fearless producer come in and say, no, you can do better?
Yeah, for sure. But I wasn't, I'm not an arrogant person. I'm always willing to learn and change and adapt and try and be the best I can be. And I feel like the duo definitely aided that.
Was it a fraught process to sand off some of those edges then, or you guys were ready and willing?
It was a very easy process. And we'd always... Those first two albums, we had put some limitations on ourselves in terms of how much of a studio album we were going to do. And then this one, we were ready to expand our palette. And in fact, we probably wanted to expand it even more than we ended up doing. But we just had a great relationship with Jack Ladder and Burke. And from the get-go, really, I mean, it was hard work, but it was an easy process. And in the studio, you do get to difficult moments, especially because we really... like I said, deconstructed the songs. And I described it to someone as like you've taken apart some sort of machine at some points and all the parts are lying around and you're like, oh God, are we ever going to be able to get this back together? But yeah, we had faith in the team and each other and it came together.
And there's keyboards aplenty on songs like Harry Station and Cannonball, and I know it's Jack Ladder's mission to get more bands sounding like Japan.
The Selena. He actually did a lot of that. Well, a lot of those synths were at his house after we'd finished, and yeah, we loved the work that he did on them. He's a very impressive musician, Jack Ladder, because what he plays isn't, you don't think of that style of music as being particularly virtuistic, but he really has a great control over like keyboards and guitars
and can probably mop the floor with you guys as well for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Thematically on this album, you've certainly kept plenty of baddies touchstones. Name-checked your classic Aussie band, the Triffids, in Cannonball, and even an Adelaide shopping centre, the Kmart down at Tea Tree Gully Mall.
It's actually Northern. Tea Tree Gully Plaza.
Yeah.
Tea Tree Plaza, but we had to change it for the sake of the song.
Well, I didn't. That was just, I only found out that recently when Fitzy tweeted about something, and then there was these aficionados of the northern suburbs came in and said, "There's no Tea Tree Gully Plaza. That's bullshit. It's a Tea Tree Gully Mall." But yeah, we've got a few, and then we. There's a bit of an Angels reference in there sneakily.
The songs are sort of, I mean, in a way, deliberately punctuated by those cultural references as well, because it, yeah, thematically it does tie in with what would you, you know, be listening to, or what would you do if the world was ending, because it kind of does feel post-apocalyptic at the moment. So there was that undercurrent.
Do you also find you have to write about what you know, and there are less people writing about Tea Tree Gully Mall / Plaza than, say, singing songs about driving with the top down in LA? Like, that's something you wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, authenticity is extremely important for us, and telling stories and writing about things that we know about is how we try and achieve that. And yeah, Adelaide, even though we don't all live there at the moment, is the core of our identity, really.
Lyrically, could you write rant songs all day long about toxic masculinity and messed up Australian culture? I mean, Salad's got elements of that. I mean, have you always had sort of a love-hate relationship in terms of what you're documenting, Ben?
Yes, we could write them all day, every day, to answer the first part of the question. And yeah, I guess there is a bit of a love-hate relationship, because a lot of the things we see and we are singing about and writing about, you know, those types of people are also close to us too. Not to say that they're bad people or they are toxic males or anything, but, you know, we've been a part of football clubs growing up and sporting teams. But yeah, there's a lot of things that when you grow up and you get to the age that we are now as middle-class white guys, you have to unlearn and put yourself in a position to listen and learn to try and, yeah, educate yourself and become a good human being.
How have you also found yourselves navigating that world as Bad Dreams has become bigger and you've played things like the Adelaide 500? You kind of dip your toes in a lot of that world also.
It's interesting with that whole thing. I mean, on this album especially, I kind of, with the last album, I kind of got a bit tired of the people talking about being a political band. I guess we've never really thought explicitly about that, but it just comes out in the music. And again, I even thought this time, trying to shy away from any overt political topics, but it's still just there.
It's a stream of conscious, just the imagery.
Yeah.
The things that we see in sort of a blurred vision.
But to answer your question, I think that's one thing that's kind of, we find ourselves in an interesting space, because we do attract, we have a male preponderance in our fan base, and we do play at things like the Adelaide 500, the SNFL football grand final, what you might call traditionally like male spaces. And they have traditionally some problems associated with masculinity. But I think that's why it's important that we do be exploratory in what we're writing about and don't shy away from the ugliness of those topics or the nuances of those topics, so that hopefully those, if people are coming to us who are perhaps a bit anachronistic in the way they view the world, then maybe they can be spurred on to thinking about things more deeply.
Was it also a no-brainer to do the promotional footballs for
well, yeah, it's a good merch idea.
It's never a no-brainer, but also kind of, I mean, yeah, that's another thing about, the fact is that we actually all, we met at a football club, so it'd be, it's kind of be more disingenuous if we shied away from that stuff. But I can see why it does sort of confuse people, but that's up for people to work out.
So we'll know you're faking it when you're doing Bad Dreams tennis rackets as promotional items instead, right?
That's for the next
Well,
album,
we were thinking about a pair of ballet shoes, but they were too expensive to manufacture. They didn't come in. It was hard to get the big men's sizes too.
What happened to the original working title, which was Apocalypse Boogie, then?
I don't know.
Well, I always liked that title, but no one else really liked it. And then, it just fell by the
I think the word Doomsday sort of caught everyone. We had another working title called Doomsday Jukebox, in keeping with the, you know, the songs that would be playing as the world crumbles away. And that turned into Doomsday Ballet, that sort of pairing of the end times and like a rigid structure of like an art form that is ballet.
Ben and I had this vision one day. We were sitting around working one of the songs, and a vision of a sort of a cult somewhere out in the outback.
Bush Doof Boogie.
Yeah, Bush sort of a band playing, the band that would be playing there as you're sort of in the horizon, the sort of mushroom clouds and the sun's dying and whatever. And the type of party and music that would be going on while that's happening.
But you can have that one next time, maybe.
Yeah.
Look, it's so great to have the record out and you guys out and about playing and kicking some goals, metaphorically and literally, I guess, with the footballs. We might have a listen to Sonny now on the show. Thanks for the chat, Ben and Alex. You guys look after yourselves
on the
road.
Thanks again, Berto.
Thanks,
Berto. This is Bad Dreams on Static. Thanks.